Hi, I'm Matt Shepard.
And I'm Chad Shepard.
And coming up on this edition of Shep Shower and Shave, special guest Darren Elliott, Fox Sports Detroit hockey color analyst, joins us to discuss the Red Wings' direction, the NHL draft, and what the pipeline looks like to try and help this team get back to where we're used to seeing it in postseason play. That's coming up on Shep Shower and Shave. Hope you had a good weekend. So the Red Wings had a very busy weekend in Chicago. They had 11 draft picks. We'll get to that coming up. First, we welcome in Darren Elliott, a good friend of ours, and where the Red Wings may be headed. We know, Darren, that this team did not perform the way many people expected this past season, but we did see Grand Rapids win another Calder Trophy. Who are some of the names that you think can add to Detroit's roster, their depth coming up, not necessarily this year, but within the next couple of years?
And it's really going to be over the next couple of years. That's the thing. Even when you win a championship, having played so much my career in the American Hockey League, winning is important. Developing your game is important. But thinking that everybody's still looking at you is not realistic. So what I'm saying is the guys, that you have 20 guys that win a championship mm-hmm. at the American Hockey League level, there might be three or four guys that are actually end up being guys that make a contribution overall to the Red Wings, not just next season. Mm. And that's like the kid Svechnikov. He's going to spend another year down there. Now, I think the Red Wings probably are going to have to move their process along. The 3+ years in the minors, they might have to accelerate that thinking a little bit, the way the game's going younger. But I think on defense, you have the youngster Hicketts, yep, certainly Saiarvi and Ronick as well. They didn't get much playing time, but Hicketts had a full year this year. So I would think he's probably first up on the depth chart from down there. In the draft, not to jump ahead, they took 5 defensemen. So you can see they're just looking at more chips at the table, because that's really what it takes. You have to have more rolls of the dice to see who's actually going to develop. Certainly, I think that Tyler Bertuzzi will compete for a spot this season with the Red Wings. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I don't know that there's anybody from Grand Rapids that, you know, maybe Jared Coro is in the mix somewhere if there's something that happens with the goaltending over the offseason. But that's where you are right now. You're looking probably the following season. And that brings us to next season. Really, I think with the Red Wings, with their contract situations, the roster that they have, you're going to look for guys to play better than they did last year, which was not a good season, obviously.
Yeah. Martin Furk is a name that is constantly brought up. He was let go. Carolina grabbed him, had him on a 10-day, shipped him right back. There are certain players, I think, in Grand Rapids, and we've seen this within that system before, who just stay there
right.
Because they're AHL players. There's nothing wrong with that. You're still a pro. You're just not making it to the National Hockey League. Patience is a really difficult thing for fans. How much does that test a front office like the Red Wings? Because they haven't really had to be used to being doing that. I mean, they've had guys stay there for an extended period of time. The patience, something is, I would guess, they're still kind of learning, right?
There's a fine line between patience and being productive in your development. I mean, because you have to know where these kids fit at the next level. Does it translate? So it might be a player is really, like you said, a good American Hockey League player, but if you don't have a good enough look at him at the NHL level in time, does that guy just kind of, you know, the term has been overripe. Yeah. When does he turn rotten? Because the two can be the same.
But how long does that take for you to get a gauge on a guy whether he can play in the NHL?
I think you need to have him come up and play, you know, at least a 20-game segment. You know, I think you have to find those things out earlier, the way the game is now. If you look at what the Pittsburgh Penguins have done, they've started guys and at the American Hockey League level, and if they're productive, they bring them right up. And they go, okay, show us. And if it doesn't happen right away for them, back down they go, back up they come. And you only get a couple cracks at it.
Yeah.
But once you do, you grab the time. Nick Jensen did that.
I mean, sure.
This year. You, as an athlete, this is your opportunity. It's his first, and it might have been his only. He grabbed his situation, played 47 games, got a contract, and then was protected this year in the entry draft.
So because that happened 2 years ago where Pittsburgh had replaced their head coach with Mike Sullivan in December of that season, he was coming from Wilkes-Barre, so he knew those AHL players really well. Jeff Blashill followed a similar path, and I think some Red Wings fans may look at one situation and try to compare it to the other. They're not the same situation, but for Mike Sullivan to step in and basically turn his NHL club into a grander version of what he had been doing at the AHL level, philosophically, Jeff Blashill maybe he's not able to do the same thing because the roster is not built the same way. Is that fair?
Well, that's part of it. The other thing is, you know, Mike Sullivan is an accomplished coach, had a lot of experience, more than Jeff Blashill, to be honest with you. And I think that that whole notion that he was down in Wilkes-Barre was overblown. He was only there half a season. The Pittsburgh Penguins organization, Jason Botterill, who's now the GM in Buffalo, ran that squad. They had long put in, even under Ray Shero when he was the GM, they had put in a system where our minor league system is going to be the same, and it's going to be a pipeline. They built it that way. And so that was whoever was at the helm, that was the way they were processing. And they had a philosophy, and they stuck to it. And it was about, you know, just no different than the Red Wings. They had the philosophy before anybody else. Move the puck from the back end. Always have the puck. Have small skill. We don't care what size you are as long as you have good skill and good skating skills. They were on the head of the – Pittsburgh did that. You watched Nashville in the final. All they have these four defensemen that can move the puck, so they have the puck a lot. That's what the Red Wings did for 20 years. Yeah. So, you know, that's what you have to, you know, look at. They were on the forefront of that, and now they're behind that curve because all they have are prospects in their system and defensively. And that really, that's the driver for offense and for keeping the puck out of your net these days.
Talking about that philosophy, as we segue a little bit into the draft talk from this past weekend, this really was a philosophy-based draft. It seemed like to me that the Red Wings were, it's not for me to say necessarily stretching, but there were a lot of fit-based picks or need-based picks. And when you do that, there is sometimes the perception that you're doing that in lieu of taking the best player available. Were there a couple instances where, now, if the Red Wings front office were drafting based off of what they saw in online rankings, that would be a bigger concern, but were there a couple instances where maybe a guy was taken off the board who could have slid further? And if that's the case, is there something to be said for the way, I know it's easier said than done, but a team like the New England Patriots does it, where they have a guy that's targeted, they think they can get him 13 picks lower, and they slide down half a dozen picks and pick up a second rounder next year or something like that. I think a couple fans might feel that Red Wings have missed an opportunity in that area.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when you are out in front, and you're out in front so long, it's hard to stay there.
Yeah.
Even if it's philosophically. So if you look at what this draft was all about, because there were no can't-miss projects, you know, Hischier went first, Nolan Patrick went second, they're going to be NHL players. But are they going to? They're not generational. That term that everybody uses.
Right. It's not Connor McDavid.
Correct.
Right.
And we've been spoiled the last couple of years.
Austin Matthews. Yeah.
Right. So all these guys that are drafted, you know. So anyway, that turned the philosophy. It seemed like for the draft, where teams were willing to trade picks for players. More teams were willing to slide down and acquire picks. Arizona did it constantly.
Yeah.
But I think
Las Vegas did it.
Las Vegas, they really could do it.
Yeah.
But again, sort of Arizona went in. They still don't have a coach. They didn't have a starting goaltender. They didn't have a number one center. They didn't have anything going into the draft. And they solved all those needs. They might not have done it in a very pretty fashion, mind you, but they got to it. I mean, they wanted to change the culture. They finally have one owner. So all of a sudden, the guys who've been there the longest, Dave Tippett, coach, you're gone.
Shane Doan,
Mike Smith, goaltender, all the three guys that have the roots with that, they said, you're gone. And then they turned around and used their picks, moved down in the draft, made some bold moves. Now they have Derek Stepan as their number one center. Now they have a number one goaltender and Antti Raanta. So they addressed them pretty quickly by that same thing that you were talking about. The Red Wings, by contrast, they said, we finally have picks, 11 picks. We're going to the table. We're at the casino. These are our 11 markers. We're not trading picks. We're not sliding. If the guy's there that we like, when we like him, we're taking him on a need base, like you said. And the need was obviously defensemen, five of them, centermen, three of them.
Big ones.
Right. And they wanted to get bigger. Again, is that proactive for the franchise, or is that not really looking at where everyone else seems to be going, which is smaller, faster, smaller, skill. And that's really, again, Mike Sullivan pushed that to the forefront before they won the first cup against the San Jose Sharks. All of a sudden it was, and it wasn't just Chris Letang. It was, we have five guys trying to score. Because if they have five guys trying to defend, which we know, right? Every coach, hey, everybody has to be defensively responsible.
Yeah.
Well, how are you going to score if you don't put all five guys in the mix offensively? And it wasn't just Letang. It's Ian Cole at the top of the crease. It's everybody was engaged. That's the way they played. D to D to D? No, not so much. Mm-hmm. It's D to the first guy looking up ice. Mm-hmm. You might go to your partner once in a while if it's a bailout. So that changed the pace of play. And all of a sudden, Nashville's like, well, we're already built like that. Well, guess who used to be built like that? Detroit Red Wings. So are they behind the curve? No, they're just behind in terms of prospects. This year they had two pocketfuls, and they used them all.
Right, and so how you feel about how well they address those needs could just simply be based on whether or not you trust the Red Wings front office to evaluate that talent. And it's not for us to sit here and 2 days after the draft say that they've whiffed on all those guys.
We don't know.
Silly.
Yeah, because we don't
silly.
Know. And Darren Elliott, Fox Sports Detroit color analyst, former NHL goaltender, joining us here on the Shep Shower and Shave podcast. But you had brought up Pittsburgh in a couple of different situations. Yeah. Chad and I, during previous podcasts, had talked about their strength down the middle.
Yes.
And it seems like that's where we have a tendency. Certain sports, we think a backcourt in college basketball or in the NBA is the key. Quarterback the key in the NFL, for example. Starting pitching and a closer in baseball. In hockey, is it as simple as saying you've got to be strong up the middle if you want to contend for any type of championship?
Very fair. And again, go back to the 25-year run, 26 of the Red Wings. Down the middle, deeper than anybody. Puck movers on the back end, better than anybody. We play puck possession skill game by default because that's how they're built. But absolutely, you have to have strong centermen, deep at center, deep on the blue line. And when I say deep, if you go three centermen that can play and four defensemen that can log minutes in any combination, you're going to be good. And if you look at what the teams that have struggled with, saying having first overall picks, like the Edmonton Oilers, bunch of wingers.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Alex Ovechkin can't win the cup. He's a winger.
He's a winger.
You can't, your best player, you can't put your money, to me, on the wing.
That's what Chad said for years. I mean, it's got to be built up the middle. It's similar to baseball where you want a catcher, shortstop, second baseman, and center field. They are the heart of your team.
Exactly. It makes it go offensively, defensively, especially when you're leaning on your centerman to make plays and to be your best players defensively. We saw Henrik Zetterberg have a season for the ages in a crumbling season, unfortunately, at his age. He played fantastic at both ends of the ice. At least two guys have to usurp him of those responsibilities and those minutes, and it hasn't happened yet, and that's why you're now slipping even to the bottom of being a bubble team.
Is one of those guys Dylan Larkin?
Yes.
Is that his best position? Chad and I have talked about this on previous podcasts. He thinks he's a center because he plays 200 feet. Do you concur?
Yes, I think he has to be a centerman because of his skating. I think they need him to be a centerman. On the wing, it's funny because you come into the league, you've always been a centerman. They say, well, we have to kind of limit your defensive responsibility. So they put you on the wing.
Because he's a rookie, you're saying?
Yeah, because they didn't want him responsible for shutting down other top
centers.
If you're going to play in a top six role, you have to be able to play at the other end. And if you can't shut the guy down here, we want you in a less responsible role at the other end.
Exactly. And we saw how that went to start the season. Not well at all. And then there was parts of it, I think, that everyone talks about sophomore slump. Call it what you want. Doesn't really matter. But the last 25 games, we all have to admit, Dylan Larkin played really, really well at center the way they need him to play all the time. But you can't have a guy like Riley Sheahan has a season, two goals, you play with all those minutes. You can't take yourself seriously as a contender if that happens. The flip side of that is, okay, if I'm the management, I'm sitting there going, we win one more game a month, we're in the playoffs. Well, guess who else is saying that? Tampa's saying that.
Right.
Islanders are saying that. Mm-hmm. What are you doing about it? It is the next point. That's where fans get. You see Islanders all over the map. I don't know. They go get Eberle, right? They make a big trade.
Yeah.
But they had Oposo last year and just didn't re-sign. Like, they just seem to be throwing darts at a wall.
Yeah.
That's what you don't want from your franchise. So from my standpoint, Tyler Wright, the director of scouting for the Red Wings, he said we had needs to address, and we think we did. Five defensemen. four centermen, a goaltending prospect that's legit, and you go from there. Are there guys that slipped, going back to what you said earlier? Yeah, I mean, I don't know the difference because, and this is, I mean, there's lots of materials out there for people to look at, fans. But if you can tell me the difference between Michael Rasmussen and Gabe Vilardi, I watched Vilardi play five times because he played in Windsor. Well, the Western, out West, I didn't see Rasmussen play. Mm-hmm. So I can't tell you the difference. All I know is that they're similar players, both big centermen, both play big body games down low, both have good hands. I loved Vilardi, but he did fall out of the top 10, not just the Red Wings passing
exactly.
on him.
Exactly. There's 11 other teams really that passed on him.
Right. Well,
and LA had to trade up to get him at 12 because once they saw that he passed by Detroit, they thought, we got to pounce on him now.
And I'm not saying that they both have the same things they have to work on, their foot speed. Well, when you're a bigger.
Yeah,
that's like, okay.
Grow into it a little bit.
You're going to grow into your body. So all I'll say is that with Windsor being, right here, Vilardi, the Red Wings saw him a ton. They knew the head coach, Rocky Thompson. Whatever their metrics were, I'm sure it was close, and they took Rasmussen ahead of him. It's not a big deal.
Right, which is to say anyone who thinks the Red Wings were under-informed, under-scouted on Vilardi just doesn't understand the business. And anyone who's going off of those lists, I promise you the people who make those lists haven't seen a fraction of the amount of hockey that the Red Wings evaluators, who have better evaluating abilities in the first place, have seen.
And they knew what they were looking for in players. If you look at the list of the kids they picked, you had a couple of guys from Europe, of course. They've always been big over there. Mm-hmm. Is it a bit of a reach? Nobody can tell me that they've seen Gustav Lindstrom, and that's going to give everyone a heartache. Yeah. Trying to say that name.
About 30 spots wrong. How can you tell about 30 spots wrong?
But again, they're going to trust their scout who's been so good for them all these years over there. So and you play in a different league and you play in a different level, but you see one tournament where he plays in his age group and all of a sudden he's dominant, and that's what jumps out at you. So those are the kinds of things that actually go in to the picks. And even the guys that do it for a living, pro hockey rankings and prospects, hockey prospects, they get reports. They don't see all these guys like the scouts do that they're paid to do. Does it mean it's all right?
Yeah, fans
are not going to remember this stuff anyway.
No.
They can it can burn their ass a little bit right now reading about some of these certain guys, but they couldn't tell you that Philip Roenick.
I know. But here's what happens:
was a pick in the third round last year.
I know, but here's what happens: we have so much time and are such a short attention span that. 48 weeks from now, as we get ready for the 2018 NHL draft, it'll be a report card on Ryan Martin and Ken Holland, and let's take a retrospective look at every pick they've ever made, and then people go down the list and they go, yeah, that guy, we took him 158. Right. That was terrible. I remember I was pissed off then. Yeah. I'm going to get pissed off again.
Right. Yeah.
And it's so unfair. It's so unfair.
Yeah, and here's the other, to that point. I was reading an article the other day that listed the Red Wings' best draft picks, or every team's best and worst draft picks. Detroit's best draft pick was Gustav Nyquist. And I'm thinking, really? You think that was their best draft pick? I mean, let's get some type of perspective. But you brought up Michael Rasmussen, their first-round pick, ninth overall. He's a big kid. He's 6'6", okay? He played in the Western Hockey League. He had 55 points in 50 games. Describe the Western Hockey League for us, because let's face it, people around here know college hockey to a certain extent, Michigan and Michigan State, and they know the NHL. They don't watch much OHL, and they sure as hell don't watch a lot of the WHL. I remember when it was Anthony Mantha coming out of the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, and the numbers were just off the charts, and you reminded me, look, he's a good player, Shep, you said to me. The Q is not a great league, and it's tough to get a gauge.
It's a scoring league.
Right.
You have to divide
real
by
quick,
two. Yeah. Production.
That's a good rule.
So,
and real quickly, to add on to the question that you're asking here, tell us what the W is like physically, because one of the reasons they went after Michael Rasmussen is his size and his front net presence and his 200-foot game.
Right.
So
Thomas
Holmstrom. How does that translate into an NHL-level production?
Well, there's two things about the dub, as they call it, WHL, that's different. The OHL... And there is, in Michigan, because we are bordered by Windsor and you have Saginaw, you had their team in Plymouth for all those years, now it's in Flint, pretty more connected with the OHL than most people in the United States.
Fair enough,
But It's a much better league from a travel standpoint. If you look at the geography of the WHL, the toughness of the WHL is long trips, a lot of long bus rides.
Manitoba to Alberta.
Oh, my goodness. It just like hours and hours. So it's a mental and physical grind for these kids just from that standpoint. It's always been more about the two-way checking. It's a tough league. So if he has 55 points in 50 games, if he did that in a queue, that's a month's worth of production. They don't check in the Quebec. That's why so many goalies for years came out of there, because they had lousy numbers, but they saw lots of rubber. Mm. Right now you can see the way the game is going. You would think that they would be – we're talking about skill and speed. It hasn't translated. Very, very dismal performance for the Q this year, the Quebec Major Junior.
Does that maybe league. Then give a little credence to the longstanding philosophy Ken Holland has that it's a man's league and you have to be able to play a 200-foot game? Otherwise, these kids who light it up for 80 points in the Q would be able to walk right into the NHL, but it's not a roller league.
No, and that's it. And that's why, you know, Anthony Mantha, with the numbers he put up, you thought would jump right into the NHL, but realistically his game wasn't there away from the puck. Now, I like the strides he's made. He is a bona fide National Hockey League player. Can he be a 30-35 threat every year? That's what they have to get to for the team to get better.
Can he be a top six every single year?
He has to be.
Yeah.
Like right now, if you're looking at our team, those things have to happen. You know, Gus Nyquist that we saw, I mean, if you look at the metrics in terms of shot generation and all those kinds of things, he was pretty productive last year, actually, and then he finally started to score again. And Jeff Blashill is really right. Gus Nyquist, and he was a good pick because he played college hockey. Mm-hmm. I mean, a Swede comes over here, plays at Maine. Not a typical path. They found him middle rounds, and he's a productive player, but they need him to be more consistent. Mm-hmm. Same as Tatar. Those guys just have to be better. There's just no way, no way around it for the Red Wings to improve in the short term. In the longer term, all the kids we're talking about have to pan out.
Are they the same player? Are Nyquist and Tatar? That's what many people believe. I think it's more because of their stature. I don't know if they play the same type of game. I don't think they do.
Right.
But how similar are they, and why does Detroit have to have, or why does Detroit utilize two such similar type builds?
Well, they okay. So now we're looking at why the. First off, you take a look at where they drafted most of the players the last couple of years. OHL, Western Hockey League. So that Tyler Wright's over time, director of scouting, it's major junior players. A little grittier, even last year, a little bigger. They know that there's that fine line that maybe they went and had too many of the same type players for a long time in terms of not just who ended up on your roster, but if you draft. Like this year they had 11. So if you have typically seven picks and everybody's in that range of 5'10 to 6'1, well, guess what? By the time it all nets out when they arrive, at a certain point, your team looks exactly too many of the same type of players.
Right.
And that's what happened.
They talk about the phrase being tough to play against.
Correct. And the Red Wings were tough to play against because they had the puck all the time for all those years. Now they're not tough to play against because there's no physical rub. Now, don't get me wrong. A lot of teams have gone away from if you play physical, even contact makes it slow. Like if you watch Pittsburgh, there's not a lot of, like you're kind of containing on the wall. There's no more, hit the guy, stick and pin.
Yeah, they don't finish a ton of checks.
No, because now coaches think that's slow play because that takes one of your players out of the mix.
There's four going the other way.
That's right. So there, you have to understand it from that standpoint, but you can still be hard to play against. You come up with puck battles. You have to come up with the puck in those situations. But you can see that the philosophy, the last two drafts, certainly we're going with, again, the Western Hockey League tough schedule. The kids that come out of there, they're hockey players. The OHL as well. There seems to be a shift in terms of these. It's more a pro-like league for those kids. And the guys are coming out of it, the guys in charge now, they're from Western Canada. They came out a junior. So
they gravitate toward that style.
Right now it looks like it, yeah. It looks like it.
I want to talk about a couple things real quickly. We had talked about Dylan Larkin and the best fit for his position and the strength down the middle. Part of the criticism surrounding the Red Wings at times now is a couple of the contracts that they've gotten in. We've talked on this show about commitment to money down the middle. It's good to be locked up down the middle to a certain extent, but they have Helm in the early part of a deal, Shayen, I believe, in the early part of a deal.
No, Shayen's got one more year left
in
his contract.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So he would have to be looked at.
Yeah, $2 million.
Larkin, I think, has one more year on his entry-level deal. Right. And they had obviously just signed Nielsen. And Zetterberg, you can move over to the wing, but has played center for them when they've needed him there. So because they seem almost static or locked up in the middle, like there's not going to be a lot of change in that position over the next almost four-plus years. Is that something that would be the envy of some teams around the NHL because you're fixed in a position that can be really difficult to fill on the fly during the course of a season or in between seasons? Or is a little bit of a cause for concern because it's hard to change the way you're building your team when you're locked in on those positions?
I think that if you look at the players you just talked about, you're talking veterans. And that's, of all the things that have to evolve, and is probably what we're witnessing right now with the Red Wings and how they view their roster makeup and construction, is the loyalty contracts. That you have to be a little more nimble. It's good to be and their reliance on veterans. Mm. That's so many teams now. It's just the nature of the game. It's younger, quicker. On the surface, it would be great to be locked in to Zetterberg, Nielsen, but those are, like, you're starting to talk, I mean, these are older guys.
Right.
And the game's getting faster. Not that they can't play, but it's a different
game. You don't want
game.
Them to carry the load as
you
much.
Shouldn't, yeah, so you have to have Larkin emerge. Mm-hmm. You know, Athanasiou, is he a right. centerman? I mean, that's the speed and pace. Can you play all the other elements of it? You're going to have to. Helm... is he a winger? I mean, he wants to be a centerman. Yeah. Like you said, that Zetterberg will play the wing. It's only when Datsyuk was a centerman.
Right. No, I think
he doesn't want to play
right.
very much.
He wants to be a center.
I think there was a time when Mike Babcock called Darren Helm the best third or fourth line center in the NHL. And when he's healthy, we've seen him be really effective and create shorthanded scoring
that
chances.
I always thought that was coach speak. To be funny.
So?
I did. I really did. It's like, I know what he was saying. He was doing it to pump him up. But he was saying, if we have Darren Helm on our third or fourth line, that means we're a good team.
Yeah, that means our first and second line is pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's really what he was getting.
Better set. Yeah.
But again, that was and is Mike Babcock.
Well, the reason I ask that, and I'll relay this into something else, but I think that it ramps up the importance for those wingers and those young players to be 200-foot responsible players. Because if you're locked in down the middle and you have, with the exception of Helm, maybe guys who aren't known for their speed or guys who are getting on in years or maybe have had stretches of injuries where Zetterberg has to miss a couple games here and there, the guys around them, they can't be dragging them along all up and down both 200 feet. So Mantha, Athanasiou, Larkin, if Bertuzzi makes the team, those guys have to be able to not only carry their weight but maybe take a little bit off the guys in the middle who are doing so much at both ends. And I think that... Again, I've got.
Well, isn't that why Riley Shayen had some troubles? Don't you think playing with Nyquist and Tatar dragged him down just a little bit? Because they don't play 200 feet?
Maybe, but if that's a bigger indictment. If Nyquist and Tatar are dragging a centerman down, then what are Mantha, Bertuzzi, Athanasiou, Furk, guys like that going to do when they get a chance? So what I'm saying is it, again, lends more credence to the longstanding Ken Holland philosophy that I'd rather over-ripen these guys, and that it is a men's league, and that if you're not able to get there and do it right away, you're going to be an impediment to the rest of your teammates.
Well, and the thing is, the reality is every organization, well, I can't say that because we saw Edmonton, we've seen Winnipeg for years do the same thing where they rush kids at 18, and all of a sudden you have four or five, six kids in your roster who are under 20 years old or under 21 years old. I think that what you're really looking at is they have to take that next step. But most good organizations want that next step for them to be successful. They want to make sure they have spent enough time that when they do get their shot, it's to be successful. Mm-hmm. You know, and not to go, okay, well, that we think that's all you are, that's good enough, and oh boy, we really don't have a good gauge on you. So that's when I said, you know, like a guy like Ryan Sproul, the defenseman, we didn't know if he could play up here, and do we still? Do we because of injuries? Those are the kinds of guys that, from my standpoint, one of the things that you might have to tweak a little bit. You might still spend the better parts of 3 years, but boy, in year if you had a good year in year one, year two you better get a sniff,
and let us see you six, seven, eight games at a time to see where you are. Right. And so then the next time he gets his call up, it's not his first time.
Right.
And now you should be a little more at ease and just go in and be able to play your game. Those are hard things to peg.
Right.
I mean, but that's where the game is. Again, we're talking about trying to come up with one more win a month minimum, and you're in the playoffs. All these little things, all these details, I think really matter.
Right, everything matters, yeah. Absolutely.
Shep Shower and Shave brought to you in part by Northwestern Tech. Heating and cooling employers are desperate for trained technicians. They're having to turn work down and unable to meet growing demand. So the individuals that are entering the HVAC field are seeing their pay potential go way up, and they're able to choose the companies that's going to help them grow their career. Northwestern Tech does it better than anybody else. Get trained, certified, and into the field in only 10 and a half months. The HVAC school that works, that's Northwestern Tech. Call right now, 248-358-4006. Fox Sports Detroit Red Wings college hockey analyst and a lot more than that. Darren Elliott, a former NHL goaltender, joins us here on the podcast, Shep Shower and Shave, as we continue to talk about Red Wings and the NHL in general. When you saw the expansion draft and you saw who was available, Chad and I had put together our lists for what it's worth. The only disagreement I had was with Ken Holland was the choice of Gustav Nyquist and Thomas Noshek. I thought they would protect Noshek because I thought he was an inexpensive option who could play a role on the third or fourth line. Nyquist, I thought, if chosen, would have alleviated some of a heavy cost that I don't think quite honestly is worth it. Were you surprised at the expansion list? And overall, did you expect him to lose a guy like Noshek, or was it going to be somebody else?
Well, again, we'll go back to contracts. They could have exposed a lot of guys that wouldn't have been taken and ended up doing the same thing. So my list, the only one I had was Howard and the two goaltenders. I had Howard exposed and Mrazek, but it didn't really matter because Mrazek, 1 year, $4 million. Howard, 2 years, $5.2 or $3 million, I forget exactly. Nope, they're not taking that. And if you saw what
Las Vegas is
right. Vegas wasn't going to take
with Fleury.
Those. Well, not just that. They were. Everyone said going in they were going to load up on goaltenders. Then they found out how soft the goaltending market was. So what did they load up on instead? Defensemen.
That's the biggest ransom is for right now.
Right, because the goaltenders are. You know what? The market that we thought going into this 6-7 months ago. We're not loading up on Ranta, Grubauer. Forget it. Because they thought they could take those and flip them, found out they couldn't, went with defensemen instead. So that's why I never thought there was a risk. I think the exposure of Mrazek over Howard was more an internal sending a message, hey, our culture still matters and you've got some work to do. I think that sends an internal message. Externally, I think it was irrelevant.
Interesting discussion as always. I wanted to talk a little bit about something that we had gotten to earlier in the podcast that's a little bit more meta and kind of applies to a couple other topics that we discussed in previous episodes here. You talked about Phoenix a little bit, and they made their move to get their number one center in Derek Stepan and their number one goalie in Antti Raanta from the Rangers. They also relieved Dave Tippett of his duties, and they have a very young general manager in John Shaika.
Yep.
He's 26 years old or 27 years old.
27 now, yeah.
Was brought in about 13 months ago, May of 16. Dave Tippett had been in Arizona for a while. Shane Doan had been the franchise basically since its inception or since its move there. Shaika was a guy that had a lot of people talking in the industry when he was hired, especially because he had an analytics base.
Right.
I want fans in Detroit, and this isn't necessarily a question for you, but I want fans in Detroit to look at the timetable that he took. I can promise you that when he arrived in Phoenix on day one, he knew that they were not going to become a really winning team with Shane Doan as a major part of the lineup. Maybe he didn't know that Dave Tippett needed to go right away, but he could relatively quickly assess him and assess Mike Smith and understand that those were pieces that they were not going to be able to move forward with. I want fans to understand that he waited to make that change until it would actually make Arizona better. He didn't just fire them because he knew they weren't going to be able to go forward with him. He didn't just fire them because fans wanted it to go in a different direction. He waited until Phoenix could actually get better by their dismissal. And for all the fans that want Jim Caldwell's head on a platter, that want Brad Ausmus's head on a platter, that want other executives or coaches around the city of Detroit, wait. You don't just make those moves for the sake of making them. You wait until your franchise is in a position to get better by making that move. And that's what I would ask. Would ask some fans when they who want to see some of these changes. Do you have somebody in place right away that can make an improvement at the position that you're suggesting a change is required in the first place? Look at the path that John Shaika took there, and try and apply that to some of the mini rebuilds that you see going on in Detroit, and have a bigger, more long-term view of it.
Yeah, the Arizona Coyotes, I mean, let's face it, they've been a mess. Dave Tippett was hired to coach that team well over a decade ago when the league was running it. The league actually hired Dave Tippett. And so to run that team, that's how long he's been there. And then they gave him last year a really strange thing happened where they got rid of the general manager who'd been there forever, and Maloney,
yeah.
And made him like head of hockey operations and head coach. So he had a lot of authority. Well, what changed was the ownership dynamic. They have now one owner in Arizona who obviously sides with the GM, and they wanted to, okay, this culture that we've had, it's been just a kind of a mess for the most part. And whether those guys were responsible for it, probably not. Those were some of the best guys and best things that happened, Shane Doan, Dave Tippett, Mike Smith. But they cut ties with the past is what they did to move forward. And because they've been so bad for so long, they have a ton of young they're almost like a junior all-star team last year. Mm-hmm. Doesn't make you win in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
But now, as you said, Chad, they moved forward adding some pieces that make them a little more stable, even though they still don't have a head coach.
If you were commissioner
yes.
of the National Hockey League, give me a change you would make to make your league better.
Boy, you know, there's lots of some of the stuff that they've trotted out. Like the offside thing has to be addressed. A video review on that. It's just become too time-consuming.
And I think they're looking into
that. Yeah,
they are. And by the way, to the league's credit, what just took place at the draft in Chicago was widely embraced and I think is a major jewel in the crown of what the NHL is wearing right now.
Yeah, they're doing some really good things. They're looking at adding NCAA teams. I mean, they're really invested in a lot of levels now that never used to be, right down to youth hockey. I mean, and the league has a big say in all this thing, all the things going on. The USHL is going to have to expand. The NHL is behind a lot of this stuff, the NHLPA. So the league is doing a good thing on a lot of levels. The tweaks to me, you know, I'd like to see, you know, everybody served the full 2 minutes on power plays. I think that
agreed.
Time has come for that. With the new rule USA Hockey just passed, which I really strongly endorse, for under 14, icing the puck on a power play, it blows it dead. You don't get time off the clock. It comes back face off in your own zone. I think the NHL should look at that, too. At the younger ages, it makes a lot of sense, right? It forces kids to make plays in all situations, even when you're down a skater. But I think that's something that could easily be adopted. If you ice the puck, you know, it comes back in and offensive zone restarts.
So those are just a few rule changes.
Right.
Overall, you think the league's in a very good space.
I do. I think they need to get to 32 teams. I mean, the way it is right now, unbalanced with the number of teams out you know, that's not what they want, 16 and 15. So you know they're going to try to get to 16.
Another one in Canada?
Is that Quebec City?
Yeah.
Is that a second Ontario team? Or is that a Seattle expansion?
Personally, I think it'd be better out in Seattle.
Why?
Just because the growth potential for the sport, in terms of all the things we just talked about, you need those kinds of reference points if you're going to grow NCAA out west, if you're going to grow the fan bases out west.
You have a direct line right there to Western Canada anyway, right?
And they've had Seattle Thunderbirds have been a successful junior franchise for years and years and years. So that's where I think Quebec, love it. But it's hard to get to. It's a very small population. Every time the dollar fluctuates, you're going to be in those kinds of situations again, economically, potentially. But they would support it locally. But does that globally, does that really...
Edmonton supports theirs, too.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily
mean
it's...
Globally, does that really help the NHL?
Right.
Well, part of what you talked about is people, how easy it is to get there. We saw with Vegas making its first selections this past weekend, the look on some of the players' faces who were going to go play there. They had a couple Las Vegas natives that they had taken in the expansion draft. would players be excited to go live and play in Quebec City? I know that it can be hockey mecca to a certain extent, like Montreal or Toronto, but it's
metropolises.
Right, it's a very different environment in Quebec City, and it is very much a French province,
yes,
French speaking province. Like, it's not the same. You can't get around as easily with English, right?
Not even as Montreal, and it has the highest taxes of anywhere in North America.
Right.
Oh, really?
Right away, agents are So there's all those kinds of things that work against it. But I mean, they've built the big stadium. TVA is a huge conglomerate of communications, TV, radio, all those kinds of things. So there's money behind it, but is that really just kind of narrowly focused? I think it would be from a league perspective.
Let me bring it back to the Red Wings real quick, and that is, we know we've talked a lot about their defense, their puck-moving ability. I don't think they have a one. I don't think they have a two on the blue line. I'm not sure they have a three. What would it take for Darren Elliott to trade for a Cam Fowler, a Jacob Trouba, somebody of that ilk, if you don't want to use those particular players?
Right.
What would you have to surrender in order for you to fix that area, number one? And number two, would it be worth it at this time?
Well, Travis Hamonic just got traded finally, to Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
It was a first round and 2 second round picks, I think, So there's a pretty good market. Do you think he's a number one? No, he's certainly a second pair, solid second pair guy. There's the market. I mean, if you're looking at for comparables, so you'd probably have to give up one of the ones that we've talked about, Larkin, Athanasiou, Mantha, a first, and another
future consideration.
Yeah, and another future pick, and maybe another pick off your American League roster, one of your defensemen.
And
that would be steep.
And that shows a couple things. A, how wise Vegas was to stockpile defensemen.
Correct.
Which is a strategy that, again, it's easy for us to speculate. Some fans, internet message boards, whatever, thought the Wings could have done that. Traded down in a couple spots, pick up a couple picks, pick up a couple extra defensemen, hit on one of them, and trade him.
Well, they did get five defensemen.
I didn't. And but how
not
many of those will address?
Not saying it's George McPhee, but although George McPhee, a Bowling Green guy, so good for him. Yeah.
Well, credit to Vegas and that, give them credit for understanding the currency of the current market. And then I kind of lost my train of thought there where we were running.
Talk about defensemen and the cost, and they traded currency for
Calgary.
Defensemen.
Thank you. We had talked recently about Calgary possibly being a team that might look to offload a defenseman, and that shows that you cannot have too many of them.
Right.
We talked about how good it would be to have a guy like a TJ Brody or a Dougie Hamilton, who we knew weren't necessarily movable for them. Mark Giordano is their captain.
Right.
Their top pair is Giordano and Hamilton. They went out to get Hamonic to play with TJ Brody so that TJ Brody could play his game and not be worn down by whoever the number four is. If you're right and the Red Wings don't have a one through three, that is... it's a serious, serious concern, because a team like Calgary just went out, basically paid a king's ransom just to get a three, just to get a four.
Well, think about it for a second. Who's Detroit's best defenseman? Ready? Go. Who is it?
Danny DeKeyser.
Okay, see, I disagree. Who's their best defenseman? Go.
Mike Green.
Okay.
You think it's Nick Jensen already?
I think he was their best last year.
I think he's their most consistent, and
you're right. And that's a stretch on my part. It's a very small sample size. Both of you have bigger sample sizes. All of them have weaknesses, no question.
Sure. Well, just the fact that we disagree.
Yeah, that tells
there's
you
no
something.
Organizational clarity.
Danny DeKeyser was a minus, 25, something like that last year? It was.
Well, look, it's kind of like horrific. We talk about who's the best Tigers pitcher right now, Justin Verlander or Michael Fulmer. How far back do you want to go? I know Danny DeKeyser wasn't all that great last year, but would you still call Dylan Larkin the top offensive prospect for the Red Wings, or him or Mantha?
Yeah.
Just because he was bad for really long stretches
good
last
point.
Year doesn't mean he's not the best they
it's
have.
A fair
well,
point.
And,
yeah,
and that's,
fair
and that's where they, like we talked about, how are they going to get better? They're going to get better with guys like Danny DeKeyser having a much better season.
Yes.
That has to happen. Riley Sheahan has to score 15 goals.
Mm-hmm.
It has to happen. It could have happened. It didn't happen.
But he's never been that guy.
Well,
you and I covered him at Notre Dame. Never was a scorer at Notre Dame.
But he put up points with assists. He was an offensive player. He was in the mix offensively, and he got it up to 12 or 13 goals as a NHL player. So you thought, okay, but so anywhere that 10 to 15 range, if you're playing on that third or fourth line, that's what's required. Two on the last game of the season, and you don't lose any ice time because of it, that's not going to get done. So, Tatar, Nikas, we've named them all. Those guys have to be better. In goal, Mrazek has to be way better. But you go further in terms of defense, they don't. So we went. We talked about the strength. How do you build a team down the center?
Right.
You're aging at the top. You've got to have the infuse. The guys have to play young players, and when that happens, do you get better right away? Not necessarily. And you certainly don't get better right away if you're a young centerman and your decor is substandard or subpar.
Yeah, and I don't know if they have anybody coming up through the ranks either. I want your thought on one more thing.
Yeah.
Shep Shower and Shave podcast brought to you by Fifth Avenue. Always a premier destination in Royal Oak. Over 36 cold beers on tap, great food, drink specials, a kitchen that is open until 2 a.m. daily. They've got 40 HD TVs, 14-foot HD projection screen. It's also a one-of-a-kind sportsbook viewing area that is located there. No better place to watch the Wings, Tigers, Lions, Pistons, Spartans, or Wolverines. That's Fifth Avenue in Royal Oak. Chet and I talked about guys who make others better in any sport. And I know this town hates this guy, and I get it. And I don't have a problem with the venom people have toward him. But for a second straight year, Pittsburgh owns the Stanley Cup, and Sidney Crosby wins the MVP. Okay, of the playoffs anyway. Is he one of the ideal athletes in today who make others around him better? There's always that argument: Matt Stafford, Calvin Johnson, who made who? Who cares? They were both really good together. Sidney Crosby is one of those players who makes everybody around him better. Why don't more people recognize that?
I think because it's just the haters, right? Especially the more he's won. But if you look at, I mean, let's be honest. Sidney Crosby, throughout his career, Chris Kunitz, Pascal Dupuy, now it's Jake Guentzel, Connor Sheary. Yeah. These are not household names that all of a sudden are productive players. So it's indisputable.
Well, Chris Kunitz is in Big Rapids, but that's
but,
about
but
it.
What I'm saying. I know, but what I'm saying is those guys,
nowhere else.
Yeah. But those guys, you know, great careers, great veterans. Dupuy, Kunitz has his wingers early on, and now it, you know, 10 years later, here's Sidney Crosby playing with Brian Rust, Jake Guentzel, Connor Sheary, and those names have become household names because they've won the Stanley Cup twice in a row. Indisputable that he makes very average, if you will, coming up, players better, gets the most out of them. Now, there's an exacting demand on that because you have to play his game his way to be on his flanks. And so you have to give those guys credit for doing that. Locally, Henrik Zetterberg, let's face it, made Tatar, Nyquist, the production better.
Larkin.
Larkin. So we've had those same things, you know, guys that played with Yzerman going back in the day, right? Probert and Gallant.
The
stars can do that. Sidney Crosby, for today's game, because of the way it's played in small spaces, as much as anything else with the tight checking, he is the most gifted grinder I've ever seen because he has a grinder's mentality and he's a superstar talent. But his grinding ability, puck protection, play down low, bump off guys, that's not what the superstars in the open ice that we think of hockey. He has a he can go in the open ice, but man, he really makes everything happen. As I said, like the most gifted grinder I've ever seen.